the name of God, the merciful, the giver of mercy. My name is Hamza Andreas Dordis, and today I want to have a conversation with you about awakening the truth within. And this is a very, very important topic for me. In actual fact, it's a very close topic. It's close to my heart because it's about the fundamental basis of our existence, our raison d'etre, our reason for existence. Now, when we reflect on the life of the great, the giant, the leader of humanity, Abraham, upon whom be peace, we see that he was a man, a prophet, a friend of God that really wanted to awaken the truth within. He wanted to engage with his people and engage with the whole of humanity across time. And the way he wanted to do that was by giving people the opportunity, the spiritual window, so they can open, so they could reach the divine, come closer to the divine. And the way he achieved this was trying to awaken the truth within, awaken that self-evident truth. Because yes, my brothers and sisters in humanity, we have a self-evident truth that's within us. Now you may be thinking, do self-evident truths exist? Of course they do. They exist in philosophy, they exist in the philosophy of mathematics, the philosophy of biology, they exist in science itself. They also exist in religion. And when anyone studies this, even on an intermediary level, they will see that everything is based on assumptions or what some people will call self-evident truths. First principles, things that we start with in order to understand the world. And I want to give you a self-evident truth and focus on our mothers, on your mother, my mother. We all know, or many of us know, that the one that we say is our mother is the one that gave birth to us. But the interesting thing here is that self-evident truth that our mothers gave birth to us is not really based on any evidence. Think about this. She told you, you have to rely on her testimony, the fact that you trust her. Your father told you, again, you have to rely on his testimony. I have a DNA test certificate. Well, again, you didn't do the DNA test yourself. You have to rely on the testimonial transmission of a DNA test certificate. I look like her. Well, that's not really evidence because I look like my uncle, for example. So the point here is we don't really have any concrete evidence apart from testimonial evidence that our mothers gave birth to us. And this doesn't mean you have to reject your mother, of course not. But your experiences with her, your introspection, really forms this self-evident truth that your mother is indeed the one that gave birth to you. Now you may think this is not satisfactory. Fine, let me give you another example. Consider the history of the universe. One can argue that the universe began 5 minutes ago. The famous philosopher Bertrand Russell even articulated this. Maybe the universe did start 5 minutes ago, and we've all been created with all of these years of memories in our brain, in our minds. We can't really reject such an assertion, because if it's true that the universe was created 5 minutes ago, and it's true that it was created with all these memories in our minds, then we can't really reject such an assertion. But we reject it because it's a self-evident truth. It's a truth that doesn't require any external evidence. Now, when you look into this, there are self-evident truths about so many different fields of human learning and knowledge, mathematics, philosophy, science. So the point here is we need to accept that there are self-evident truths. It's not just a religious idea. It's not just a philosophical idea. It's also a scientific idea. For example, there are external causal relations. That's an assumption of science. That's a self-evident truth. We have to believe in this from a self-evident point of view. It doesn't require any other external evidence that there is these causal external connections in the world. And then we basically do the science. Now, this is no different from an Islamic spiritual point of view. We believe there is a self-evident truth within, the truth within. And what is that truth, my beloved brothers and sisters? That truth is that our hearts, our souls, what it means to be human, what it means to be a human being, is that we want to know something the most. We want to love something the most. We want to obey something the most. And we want to direct all our acts of worship, like gratitude, to something the most. And I'm going to talk about this in a few minutes. Now, this set of natural dispositions, if you like, is defined as worship in the Islamic spiritual tradition. The thing that we want to know the most, the thing that we love the most, the thing that we want to obey the most, or we obey the most, and the thing that we want to show utmost gratitude to the most and single out all our acts of worship to the most, is your object of worship. So this is the thing here, that we have this within us. Think about anything in your life. What do you love the most? What do you want to know the most? What do you obey the most, listen to the most? And what are you thankful to the most? This, from an Islamic spiritual perspective, is the object or thing or things that you worship. So it's without a doubt that human beings have this type of natural disposition. This is the self-evident truth within, that we want to know something the most, we want to love something the most, we want to obey something the most, and we want to single out our acts of worship to that thing. It could be gratitude, it could be giving thanks, whatever the case may be. But the point is, we have this within us. And from the Islamic spiritual perspective, this self-evident truth, when it manifests itself correctly, should be that we want to know God the most. We want to love God the most. We want to obey God the most. And we want to direct all our acts of worship to Him alone. But unfortunately, some of us, we have misdirected worship. Something that I'm going to discuss in a few moments. So, following on from this, since the Islamic spiritual tradition believes that we have this self-evident truth of wanting to worship the divine or worship something, how do we awaken this? Well, the unique feature of Islamic spirituality is that we don't rely on just one thing. There's not only one thing that awakens the truth within. There are many things. For example, spiritual experiences can awaken the truth within. How many stories do you read, and how many stories do you reflect upon where you see people have changed their lives overnight or over a certain process or a period of time because they had a spiritual experience or they had an existential crisis? They asked the questions, you know, why am I? Whose am I? For whom am I? Where am I? Why am I? And many of these people changed. Some people have negative experiences or positive experiences. We may have had a death in the family, and that becomes a window of opportunity to really reassess and understand our lives. Maybe we had a positive experience, like a birth of a child, or a marriage, or a new job, and that makes us reassess our path and where we are going in life. And these experiences can lead to expressing that self-evident truth within correctly, but some of us, we express it incorrectly. Something I mentioned before as misdirected worship. Also, we can awaken the truth within just by using sound reason. Yes, rational arguments. And this is very interesting because Abraham himself, as a prophet, he used intellectual rhetoric to awaken the truth within the polytheists of his time. He used intellectual rhetoric. And what I'm going to read now is statements from Abraham taken from the Quran, God's word. And these statements are an amazing form of intellectual rhetoric that concisely and profoundly prove the existence of a creator, which is also known as the argument from dependency or the argument from contingency. But it's done in a simple and profound way. Just listen to the following words. And this was the way that Abraham used to awaken the truth within his people, to get them to think. And it was a form of intellectual rhetoric. When the night grew dark upon him, he beheld a star and said, "This is my Lord." But when it set, he said, "I love not things that set." And when he saw the moon rising up, he exclaimed, "This is my Lord." But when it set, he said, "Unless my Lord guides me, I surely shall become one of the folk who are astray." And when he saw the sun rising, he cried, "This is my Lord, this is greater." But when the sun set, he said, "O my people, surely I am free from that which you associate with God. Indeed, unquestionably, I have turned my face towards him who has created the heavens and the earth, away from idolatry, and I'm not of those who associate others with God." As you can see here, Abraham, upon whom be peace, was basically using this intellectual rhetoric, using himself as the actor here, if you like, to get people to think that God doesn't sit. God is not contingent. He's not based on limited physical qualities. He's not dependent. He is independent. And all dependent things within the universe and the universe itself depends on God alone. So that is a form of awakening the truth within, using sound rational arguments. But human beings are not intellectual robots, right? And that's why Islamic spirituality is very unique, because it understands that there is this self-evident truth of wanting to worship God, to know God, to love God, to obey him, and to direct all acts of worship to him alone. And the way to awaken that could be through spiritual experiences. It could be through negative experiences or positive experiences, and it could be through sound rational arguments. So, let's now examine this self-evident truth of our need to worship. Some of us express this correctly, and some of us have misdirected worship. So let's just repeat what worship is. It's to know God, to love God, to obey God, and to direct all acts of worship, like gratitude, to God alone. However, some of us, we may deny God, we may deny his existence. Some of us, we may not want to worship him at all. Some of us may want to basically just ridicule religion. Some of us are unsure. And some of us are in doubt. But what's very interesting here, my beloved brothers and sisters in humanity, is that you can't run away from worship. You just can't. There's always going to be something that you love the most. And there's always going to be something that you want to know the most. And there's always going to be something that you want to obey the most. And there's always going to be something that you're going to be grateful to the most, that you're going to direct your acts of worship to the most. Let me give you a few examples. The first one is a crude example, but I think you'll understand what I'm saying. Take, for example, the famous singer, Justin Bieber. How many young boys and young girls, and you see this on social media, want to know him the most? They check his Twitter profile every morning and evening and during the day. They check his Facebook profile, his Instagram account. They check the magazines and the gossip. They want to know him the most all the time. They also want to love him the most. How many times have we seen young boys and girls saying, "Oh, I love Justin Bieber. I couldn't exist without him. My life is meaningless without him. I love him so much. My dying wish is to shake his hand or give him a hug or even give him a kiss on the cheek," right? Also, many young men and young boys or young girls, they also obey Justin Bieber. It's a form of obedience, because if Justin Bieber were to, for example, say spinach is good for you, there would be an increase in sales of spinach. And that's how basically many of these singers make their money, because they are seen as authorities, as social authorities, and they are seen as, you know, celebrities from that point of view. So if they are sponsored by a famous brand like Nike or some spinach company, you're going to see the sales increase, and it happens all the time. Also, a lot of these young boys and young girls show and express acts of worship to Justin Bieber. Why am I saying this? You know, they're not bowing down to him, of course not. But what they do is this, is that they may buy his memorabilia, or they may buy some of his merchandise, or they will be thankful to him excessively. "I thank Justin Bieber. If it wasn't for him, I'd have such a sad life," right? And this, from an Islamic spiritual point of view, is an expression of worship. Do you see what I'm doing here? There's always something that you're going to love the most. There's always something that you're going to know the most. There's always something that you're going to obey. And there's always something that you're going to direct your acts of worship to, like gratitude. Let me give you another example. You, me, ourselves. Sometimes we want to love ourselves the most from a kind of egocentric point of view. Like, I am the best. From a narcissistic point of view, I am the best, I'm better than others, I am everything, I love myself so much, right? And you want to know yourself, you know, what makes me tick? What are my key core instincts? How am I going to express them, right? You obey yourself from the point of view that you obey your lowly desires, like your kind of bestial needs of, you know, the survival instinct and the procreation instinct. You just react to those basic bestial needs. And also you have a form of self-worship. What do I mean by that? Because you're always thankful to yourself that I am the source of all success, of my success. You know, you have this kind of full sense of self-sufficiency. You know, you don't believe that your very existence is based on an infinite number of variables almost that you had no control over. You know, you almost believe that you were catapulted out of your mother's womb with a briefcase and a tie and with this success. You don't realize that your very success and your very being and your life is based on so many other infinite variables. You know, we become individualized, but in reality, we are individual. And we have this full sense of self-sufficiency. So from this point of view, you could worship yourself. Interestingly, God says this in his book, the Quran. He says, have you not seen the one who takes his desires as his own Lord? I'm the best. I love myself. I want to know myself. I obey my bestial instincts, survival and procreation. And I'm thankful to myself. Like that's it's an expression of worshiping myself because I am the source of my success, which is actually false in reality. So from this point of view, you know, many of us have misdirected worship. We love something other than God. We want to know something other than God. We obey something other than God. And we basically direct all acts of worship to something else other than the divine. So we don't really run away from worship. Because if there is something that you know the most, and there is something that you want to love the most, and there is something that you want to obey the most, and there is something that you direct your acts of worship and your gratitude towards the most, then that is your object of worship. But my point here is, who should be worshipped? Isn't it the divine? Isn't it God? Who knows you better than you know yourself? Who has more mercy for you than your own mother? The one who created you and the one that nurtures you? The one who is all-knowing, the one who created you, doesn't he deserve to be known? Who created you? Just think about this. Plant this seed in your heart and mind. If you were created, then wouldn't you want to know your creator? Absolutely. And from the Islamic spiritual point of view, God is not only the creator, but he is the loving. Known in Arabic as Al-Wudud, which means a loving that is excessive. And his love is the most purest form of love because he doesn't need to love. All created types of love are based on a need, even a mother's love, because it fulfills her. God doesn't require fulfillment. God is independent, he's rich, he's free of any need, yet he loves and he gains nothing by loving. Look how pure that love is. If I told you someone was coming into your room right now, and that person is described as the most loving person ever, what would happen within you? You would want to basically get to know that person, get to love that person, understand what makes them tick. It's a natural thing, but imagine God, who is the excessively loving, his names, his attributes, who he is perfect, has no deficiency and no flaw. His love is to the maximum degree possible. So how can you not love the one who is the source of love? How can you not love the one who created love itself? How can you not love the one that is the most loving, that is boundless in his love? And his love is to the highest degree possible, unlike anything that you can imagine. So we should know God, we should love God, and we should obey him. Now you may be thinking, look at this religious person talking about obedience. I'm a free individual. But hold on a second. We obey things all the time. When you go to your doctor and you give them a set of symptoms, they say, based on your symptoms and my background knowledge and my medical expertise, you have this disease, take this medicine. What do we do? Do we question the science? Do we question the doctor? Of course not. We submit and we obey to the authority. This is a given. This is even known in Western philosophy. Dr. Elizabeth Fricker, she makes a beautiful point. She says, given that my limitations are parametric, they're limited, right? I have to basically obey the authority of others. I have to submit to the authority of others. This is a given. No one's going to know all knowledge. When we're on the plane and the pilot says, there's going to be some turbulence, please fasten your seatbelt, what do? We don't start moonwalking on the aisle and start dancing. Of course not. We sit down and we buckle up. Why? Because we're obeying the authority here. We may know nothing about the physics of flying, nothing about what it means to be a pilot, but we obey that authority. We obey authorities all the time, but God is the greatest authority. These authorities have limited knowledge and it's deficient, whereas God has the picture. We just have a pixel. God's wisdom is total. Our wisdom is fragmented. God's knowledge is total. Our knowledge is fragmented. So it only makes sense that you're going to obey God. And finally, you're going to worship God. Direct your acts of worship to Him alone. Why? Why? Why did it start with gratitude? Because we must be grateful to God. Because He created us. Now, this is not an outdated religious cliche or spiritual cliche. It's a fact. And you have to understand this. Because think about God creating you means that He has freely given something to you that's so priceless. That you don't earn, you don't own, and you don't deserve. And what's that thing? It's this moment and the next moment and every moment of your conscious existence. He has given you life that is priceless. If you're a billionaire and I said you had 5 minutes left, in order to have an extra 5 minutes, give me £1 billion, you would give it freely. That's how valuable and priceless life is. Yet it's given to you freely at every moment of your existence. And you don't own it, you can't even create a fly. You don't necessarily earn it. What can you do to receive such an amazing gift, the gift of life, and you don't earn it? So from that point of view, my brothers and sisters in humanity, if God has given something to us freely at every moment of our existence, then how should that make us feel? We should be grateful. And gratitude is a key to worship. We should be grateful to the one who has given us this free, priceless gift that we don't earn, we don't own, and we don't deserve. If I gave you, for example, $100 every day, after a year, I came to see you. A sound person with a sound mind and heart would say thank you. But many of us, we don't thank the one that gave us the gift. We start thanking the gift itself. And that is a spiritual, intellectual, and rational absurdity. So it's your choice. You can't run away from worship. There's always going to be something that you love the most. There's always going to be something that you want to know the most. There's always going to be something that you obey the most. And there's always going to be something that you're going to direct your acts of worship, like gratitude, towards the most. So you choose. A created, limited, deficient thing, or the creator of the heavens and the earth, who has no flaw, has no deficiency, is maximally perfect. His names and attributes are maximum. They are to the highest degree possible. A sound, rational, and spiritually in tune person would worship the creator, not the creation. Especially when we know the Creator is the maximally loving, the merciful, the knowing, the wise. And finally, when you worship God, brothers and sisters and friends, it actually frees you. It frees you. I want you to reflect on a very special verse in the Quran. The Quran says, consider the condition of two people. One person is a slave, is a servant to many masters, and they're all quarreling. And one man is a servant to one master. Whose condition is best? And this really summarizes what we've been saying. You can't run away from worship. There's something that you're going to love the most, know the most, obey the most, and want to worship. You can't run away from that. We've already discussed this. So God is saying to us, whose condition's best? The one who worships all of these masters that are quarreling, or the one who's worshiping one true master? In essence, God is saying to us, when you worship God, you free yourself from the servitude and slavery to all the other objects of worship. Your politicians, your teachers, peer pressure, society, the social constructs, materialism, ideologies, all of these isms and schisms. You de-shackle, you break the shackles to those things, and you truly free yourself by being at service to the divine. The one who knows you better than you know yourself, the one who loves you more than anything, and the one that is more merciful than anything you can imagine. So from this point of view, I advise you, as my beloved brothers and sisters in humanity, to really think about this concept and start to internalize these ideas and come to the conclusion that we should stop having misdirected worship and direct all our worship to God alone, who deserves all worship. That we want to know our Creator, we want to love our Creator, we want to obey our Creator, and we want to direct all acts of worship to our Creator alone. Not only because this is a self-evident truth within, but also because it frees you from the shackles of the misdirected forms of worship. And significantly, my beloved brothers and sisters in humanity, you have to realize that accepting this and understanding this and internalizing this makes you eligible not only for a life in this world full of tranquility and contentment, but also a hereafter full of eternal bliss. And know that if you reject this, if you actively reject this, if you run away from God's guidance and God's mercy, then you have thrown yourself into an eternal form of degradation, an eternal self-inflicted punishment. Why? Why am I saying this? Because from an Islamic spiritual perspective, God prefers this belief, this faith, this understanding of this self-evident truth for all of His creation. He doesn't want to send anybody into this self-inflicted punishment. But He has given us the gift of free will. And through free will, we can choose to embrace God's mercy and guidance, or we can choose to run away from it. And the spiritual logical consequences of running away from His guidance and running away from His mercy is an absence of guidance and an absence of mercy, which is a form of self-inflicted punishment. So I hope you understand that really internalizing this within you and accepting the fact that God deserves to be worshipped, to be known, to be loved, to be obeyed, that this is not only a key to truth and to awakening that truth and expressing that truth in your life, but it's also a key to eternal bliss. So my beloved brothers and sisters in humanity, I hope this has planted seeds in your heart and mind so you can continue your spiritual journey. Investigate further. Find out what it means to worship from the Islamic point of view. Find out what the Quran actually says. Find out what are the true teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, upon whom be peace. Find out what Islam says about directing acts of worship to God alone. Find out what it means to love God, to know God, to obey Him. Please be on your journey and share the feedback with us as well, because we're all human beings on this amazing, interesting journey called life. Now let me end with a quote by a very famous classical scholar. His name was Al-Ghazali, and he's also known in the Latin tradition as Al-Ghazal. He's an 11th century theologian and polymath, and he wrote the book called The Alchemy of Happiness. And I'm paraphrasing, he says something like this. He says, "Who are you? You think you know who you are? Just because when you're hungry, you eat. And when you're angry, you fight. And when you're enraged by the passions, you make love. You think that's you? You think that's who you are? That's not you. You're no different from any other animal. That's what animals do, right? And he continues and says, the true you is in your inwardness. It's in the inward heart. So maybe we should follow the footsteps of Abraham and help others awaken the truth within and also receive that guidance so we could awaken the truth within us as well. And what is that self-evident truth? Is that there's something that we want to love the most, there's something that we want to know the most, there's something that we want to obey the most, and there's something that we want to direct our acts of worship, like gratitude, towards the most. And the point here is that the thing that we should love the most and know the most and obey the most and be grateful to the most is not creation, but the creator of the heavens and the earth, the loving, the knowing, the all-wise, the one worthy of all praise. Anything that I've said that's good has come from the creator of the heavens and the earth. Anything that I said that's inaccurate or wrong has come from my own ego. May God bless all of you. May God guide all of you. May God shower you with his boundless mercy, love, wisdom. And may you have a tranquil life in this life and a tranquil life in the hereafter. And may you, your friends and your family have a sense of inner peace and a sense of tranquility and enjoy life to its maximum. And to do that by really understanding what your purpose of life is, which is not to worship creation, but to worship the Creator. As from me, Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you. Take care of yourselves.